This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Good evening, everyone. We're back again with Travis.
Trap, that's my name. It's Trap's Trap.
Are you going to start rappity rapping?
No.
Travis, Trap, rabbity rap. Well, we were going to watch Videodrome. I still might watch it with somebody else, but you came over and then you were decided.
Well, I've seen Videodrome like a lot. So I figured let's watch something different.
That sent me scrambling. So I dug through my DVDs and I found this old DVD, pulled that out, suggested that, and we watched it.
I don't know what sold me on it. I think it was kind of just the beginning where the old man is like...
Wait, what did we just watch?
Oh, we just watched Demon Sword. I don't know. Sword of Doom. Devil Sword.
It is a world of adventure where the good are pitted against the evil. Where a wicked queen pursues her insatiable lust for men. And where a magical sword is pursued by all. The Devil's Sword. Mary Prima is Mandala, the good. Yet even he is subject to the magical spell of the evil queen. Witness as he battles with the evil crocodile men. Yet there is one warrior who just may be his match. Advent Bangoon as the wicked Banyu Jaga. Eni Christina is the woman with a great thirst for revenge. The Devil's Sword. Witness the battle between the most powerful of the evil warriors as they fight amongst themselves to see who will claim the right to the magical sword. Gudi Santara as the wicked crocodile queen. No man can escape her magic, for her lust for pleasure knows no bounds. She will stop at nothing to find the man who can satisfy her endless desires. Hold on to your seats as we take you back to a time when the forces of good fought a never-ending battle against the forces of evil. Where a man and a woman must live their lives as warriors. Where magic was king. The Devil's Sword.
I knew it was something with sword. Because there's a sword in the DVD menu that keeps spinning around.
Yeah.
It looks real deadly and demon-y.
This is released by Mondo Macabro on DVD. But it's actually just an Indonesian production. I forget who directed it, but stars an Indonesian superstar named Barry Prima. He's like an action star from back in the 80s. Now, this was released in 1984. You said about hooking you.
Oh, in the opening, like, there's this great scene of the old man preparing the sword that he's received from the heavens, which came from this really blue meteorite, I believe.
Hits a tree.
And it flies down, and this old monk says, "Hey, I'm gonna turn this meteorite to a sword." I don't think he...
He just does it.
He just goes, just suddenly, like, he's making this sword very slowly. And you're kind of watching this movie, kind of like, what's going on here? There's, like, no hook. There is no hook. Like, really. It looked terrible, honestly, when I started watching it. I was like, this looks super boring. And he's, like, in this hut. It just sort of falls apart.
Well, he tests the sword. He tests the sword. He swings it once downward, and then the hut falls apart totally. And he's like...
I didn't even make that connection.
It just works.
I just thought it was funny that suddenly there was a little bit of wind. It wasn't even blowing very hard. It was just sort of... There's some wind, and, like, his house starts just falling apart around him for some
reason.
Yeah,
he struck downward once, and
okay.
The house
I didn't even make that connection, but it was very funny to me as to why. And there's like this big palm frond or something that like lands on his lap while he's slowly playing with this. He's holding the sword with purpose, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of got that sense about him.
Right.
And I don't know, it was funny. And then the movie takes off.
Yeah, there's
gets a lot
right after
exciting.
That, there's a wedding. Now this movie got confusing. Towards the end, we were like, wait a minute, that's not the guy who we thought it was the whole time. So there's a wedding at the beginning, and there's this guy who gets married to the queen of the river?
Of the crocodile people.
Crocodile queen lady. Yeah.
Oh, great queen, accept this man as your life's partner. Take him now to live with you in your palace underneath the lake.
That's the type of movie that
we watched. Were they alligators or crocodiles? I feel like they were crocodiles.
I think they're crocs. Yeah. So he dives into the water, and we see a bunch of butts. 6 butts. I was going to do a tally, run through the whole movie, check off however many butts we saw, and they're all at the very beginning, and there are 6 butts, guys and girls. And he swims down and meets the crocodile people.
Yeah, that was disturbing. Like, there's definitely this dreamlike quality to the beginning of this movie. You're watching these people, and you haven't made any sort of connection as to why this happening, but there's just like people swimming like underwater, mm-hmm. and they keep cutting it with this procession of people all wearing fancy wedding clothes. Yeah, so the beginning of this was just very strange. Like, I couldn't tell, even though I kind of guessed what was happening. I didn't mean to.
Whoever wrote the story, well, the writer of the story is Man.
Yeah, that's such a great name.
I don't know if that's just saying a man wrote it or mankind wrote it.
Took his name off.
Or yeah, if it's a pseudonym or something. But this part of the story, at the very beginning, establishes that it's strange. And that there's crocodile lady.
I can't exactly place why, like, this first scene was so weird to me. It was just these people swimming underwater, but they had, like, sacks over their heads.
Well, we didn't see the front of them. I think that those were crocodile people.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they were.
And those were the crocodile
heads. But it just seemed real...
It's bizarre.
Kind of weird and creepy. It's like, why are they cutting this scene with these weird swimming people here?
So, shortly after that, a brand new character comes in. Do you think maybe he's the hero?
Hear me, great warrior. I have a favor to ask of you, a task which only you can perform. Stop the marriage between Sanjaya and Pitaloka.
He's commissioned by the Crocodile Queen to go and stop another wedding.
Oh, this is the guy with the hover rock.
The hover rock, yes. So he's a warrior, like basically a mercenary, I guess, who has to stop another wedding and then take the husband because the queen wants the husband because she just has a harem of a bunch of dudes and a bunch of ladies. But she really hangs out with the dudes, makes out with the dudes, and then... What? Those other ladies.
She's just basically a power-hungry woman.
She lives under the river.
Yeah, she's a witch, and she's actually super old. And she's basically the witch Morgana or whatever her name is from Excalibur, like that.
So yeah, so this has
power-hungry character
tropes that are in everybody's
fairy
tales and
every sort of like totally standard hero adventure. There's the hero. He needs to get this sword. Sword is the boon or the symbol, the thing that's gonna
the MacGuffin. Too.
It's the thing that saves everything, and he needs to use it to win. That's the plot of the story. The story is not, again, the best.
The greatest thing. The greatest thing is all the nonsense that goes into it.
Just all the choreography and all the knowing, kind of winking, self-aware effects, fighting sequences.
You said that you think beheadings. That a lot of the decisions that they made were like on the fly.
I feel like there's got to be seems. A little bit. I'm sure they planned out a general sort of choreography and said, okay, this is going to happen more or less. But then this is one of those movies where all this fun happens probably due to the fact that everything's being done with practical effects and they're doing it just by cutting things like, hey, like this happens and then suddenly cut. And now it's
the guy's
staff.
Disappeared.
This snake turns into a staff and suddenly his head is gone, and you know what I mean, like these
yeah.
sorts of
the wedding is interrupted by who we think might be our hero guy, but he's not our hero, he's a villain. Our hero comes in way later, actually, but way later in this scene. He comes down rock surfing.
Yeah.
He kicks a stone.
That jump started the movie to me. Like
yeah.
Up until that point
you were just with question marks.
I was sort of just like, this is just sort of a weird movie with really surreal visuals. And then that happens, and of course it's incredibly surreal, the floating of this rock
and he jumps on top
of
the rock.
Off of it, but
I thought he was just going to kick it.
That is where the movie reveals what it is. Everything about what this movie is, what you're going to experience, says it all with that scene.
He kicks a small boulder, then he jumps on the small boulder, then he jumps off of the small boulder, yeah. and then that crushes a dude.
Yeah, and blood sprays out all over the place as it hits him.
And so he interrupts the wedding.
That's when I realized what I was about to watch, and I was like,
got it.
Awesome.
Yeah. He interrupts the wedding, and they fight him, and what's interesting here is that the lady is like,
you bastard, get out of here! Tell her our men will no longer be sacrificed, and she won't have my husband!
You can get yourself another! Your beloved belongs to the queen now!
You'd better get out! Ah!
So she gets all of her men to fight him, and they do, and then she's like, well, this ain't happening, and she fights him with a parasol.
Oh yeah, the smoking parasol.
He does end up taking her husband, and what I found interesting about this is that he's basically, in any Western adventure type movie like this, you have a damsel in distress who doesn't really do too much,
mm-hmm.
but...
Well, this guy definitely didn't do anything.
He didn't do any, no, not a line, he just stood there.
All. I could have cared less.
You really
it looked like every other character, and at the end of the movie, I'm not really sure what happened to him, and that's okay. I'm gonna be all right tonight. I'm sleeping and thinking about this movie.
So the Crocodile Men and our villain, Thug, they get away. And the editing here is just bizarre with the Crocodile Men hopping away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of just... That's, I think, my favorite thing about this movie. I love real low budget. The whole, like, kids making movies with their parents' video camera sort of aesthetic. Where this they're is... just... They're doing whatever they need to do to just get this idea across. And it comes off and it's really funny. And that's, I think, my favorite thing about this movie is there's just tons of that. Even though I think it's a bit long and there's definitely a lot of fight scenes that go on and on and on and on and on. I feel like, how long was this movie?
About an hour and 48, 50 minutes, something like that. It's almost 2 hours.
I feel like this movie, if it was like 30 minutes, it would have been amazing.
Perfect.
It would have been perfect.
At an hour and 30 minutes, it would have been appropriate, but it went a little too long. You're right. You know, a lot of the fight scenes.
Drag. There's only so much that I think that the brain can enjoy. Like, you know, after a while, it starts to be like, okay, I've kind of...
You need more variation.
Need more variation. They're not topping necessarily anything that they've done. I don't think they really topped the whole rock thing from that beginning sequence. Honestly,
well,
there's stuff on par, like the part where he beheads that witch and it flies up into the corner rock, and then he like kicks a rock up into it. Like, that was pretty good. And then it explodes for some reason.
The actual hero comes in to try to stop the guy from taking the wedding.
Banu Jaga.
Huh?
Mandala.
Huh.
Well, it's been a long time now. Our master did not teach us our powers that we may use them for evil purposes, and certainly not to kill innocent people. If you are just passing through, it would be wise of you not to interfere. But if you are here intentionally and wish to get involved, then you will have to deal with me.
Uh-huh. And they look exactly the same. You said Ken and Royu. They're wearing the same outfit. They have the same attire. They're just different colors.
This movie did remind me of fighting games in general, just a lot of Asian action movies, comics. There's all that stuff. This is an Asian film.
But it's in
Indonesian.
It's in English. If you can find it, I think the only way you can find it is dubbed in English, which was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
No, so many entertaining insults.
I would
insults.
Say that normally I would hate watching a movie dubbed, and I'm very kind of a purist about that, but this is a movie where it's actually better
because
it's dubbed.
Yeah, I couldn't see watching this subtitled. That's why when I put it on, I was like, I don't know if we're going to watch this. I have to make sure that it's dubbed.
The bad dubbing adds to this. Like, this would be the counter argument to my normal argument about why dubbing in movies is bad, but this sort of movie really works, and if anything, it just enhances the mood and enhances the sort of personality that the film has.
So our hero, actually, he doesn't win, but it's like a draw, and then he goes to his master's house, and his master's got busted up legs.
Oh my god, yeah, that's right.
He's got busted up legs, and so he has to go and help his master, so he goes and gets some magical mushrooms.
Oh, that was so great. Yeah.
And how they show you that these are magical mushrooms is three ways. First, there's a glow behind the mushrooms, then there's smoke, and then there's smoke emanating from the mushrooms, and then there's crazy zooming in.
Do they even talk about the mushrooms?
No,
or they
he
talk
just,
about it.
He just knows that he has to go get some medical
deadly,
mushrooms.
Dangerous mushrooms, and you just imply that it's dangerous just because of the way they edit it and the way they keep zooming into it and the way that there's smoke.
Multiple zooms back and forth, and then him, when they show him, it's like there's a fan blowing on him, keeping him away, and he's like trying to get it. So he gets the mushroom and he makes some sort of poultice out of it and puts it on his master's face, which heals him, sort of.
It's just such a strange, meandering scene because it feels like they're trying to capture like one of these moments from like, say, Return of the Jedi, where he like faces off against his father.
Just barely, just briefly, because he's in the
father or some sequence where he's like learning about himself as a warrior.
Yeah, and it's
that sort of thing. And
because
it's,
the setting, it's dark and it's right, like a cave.
It's got
sort
the
of.
Feeling of that sort of scene, but
it's
just,
not.
It's dumb. Really short.
Yeah, it's really
idiotic
short.
Scene. Like right after he like grabs mushroom, he's sort of like uncomfortable grabbing them. Like, ooh, this mushroom got lots of fog and there's lots of dust and stuff shooting out of it. And then he just appears again next to his master. Like, I got the mushrooms.
Right. So he has to amputate his master's legs.
Master, I have to stop the infection. The only way that I can do it is to cut off both your legs. Otherwise, the infection will spread and kill you.
And his master's like, all right, do it. So he gets a hot sword and slowly,
slowly cuts. His legs off. I think my favorite part about that is he's cutting the legs off. He cuts the second one off, and then he just like the master's like, oh, my legs. Seems to be groaning in pain. He's like, I'm sorry, master. He like leaves the sword, just like lets go of it, like leans it against the other part of his leg, like to go comfort him as it's just still there, just sitting in his leg burning. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, so we learned that there are two devil swords, and this sends him on a quest to get one of them.
Wow, I didn't even know there was two devil swords.
Yeah.
I was attacked because I refused to tell them the secret of the devil sword, or where they could find the teacher, because they know the Jayalaksana has been working on a brand new invention for them to do battle with. It is another devil sword. But this one has violet light.
Uh-huh. See, so the movies doesn't know when to make you pay attention. Like, because when they're talking and things, I'm just not paying attention. There's not people's heads flying off and jumping around. Like, I don't know what's going on.
My advantage over you on this is that I've seen it once before.
Okay.
So I got to pay attention more to the story this time, which thankfully I did, because it's a podcast.
Well, what do you think? Did you enjoy that part of it?
Actually, detail-wise, I got confused. Like I said, I don't know who the guy at the very beginning was who got married to the lady. He's never there ever again, but we got confused and thought it was the guy that got kidnapped.
Yeah.
It's not that guy.
Not that guy.
Chaka was the guy from the very beginning, and
name.
He doesn't repeat.
Is that his name?
Yeah, that's what the guy said.
I heard Chaka and just called him Chaka for the rest of the movie.
That's what the guy, yeah, but
that's such a good name.
So then we get a big old flashback of the master fighting the bad guys.
Yeah, and these bad guys are genius. They're all pretty memorable.
Evil warriors!
Yeah, they're definitely a highlight. They remind me all of Mortal Kombat.
There's Hag Whip, which is an old witch who has a whip of many tails.
Like a cat of nine tails that she just ripped out of a palm tree.
Yeah, it's a palm frond. It's a limp, wimpy old palm frond.
Palm frond whip. Then there's Baldi.
Yeah, Baldi is a flying guillotine guy, and that's it. Flying guillotine,
and
if you know about it.
Snake staff.
Snake staff, yeah. I call them snake stick.
Oh, snake
but
stick.
But snake staff is a bit more regal sounding.
Yeah.
I am snake staff.
And you're always...
Me, I'm like, I'm snake stick.
He always turned the snake into a stick, and he'd make this big goofy grin whenever he did it. Like he was trying to be menacing.
So he's holding the snake, and it's a rubber snake, whatever, but he's holding it, stretching it out from tail to the head, and then they do a quick cut, and it's a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that the writing in here, by man, is very childlike. Whoever did the translation of the original film was like,
we have to make this George Lucas-y. So we've got to call the bad guys, and they have to totally be aware that they're bad guys.
A la Darth Vader is Dark Invader, Dark Father, all this sort of thing. Like, that's how easy. The Empire doesn't sound like, you know.
We don't know that we're not bad guys.
Here, the bad guys go,
you see, all the evil warriors of the world are united.
They call themselves evil.
Yeah, they're into evil. Like, stand by it, and they have a code of evil honor that they stand by, which is not very, doesn't go very well for them later on in the film when they all turn on each other.
Right, they turn on each other to get the second sword.
Yeah. That was fairly, it was incredibly long.
That's the where a lot of the time
very entertaining
went.
Part of the movie.
If they could edit down, if they could distill that into its essential moments.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad fight sequence at all. I actually kind of enjoyed a lot of it, but yeah, it went on and on. And then they did the next fight scene, which was okay, in the same place.
Again. Yeah, which then made it redundant and mundane.
Wow.
But it doesn't feel like a children's movie.
No.
For one, it feels like...
Occasionally, it takes itself seriously when it knows it kind of needs to. Like, that's why I feel like it's not one of those movies, like, say, like, okay, Troll 2. Like,
sure.
Okay, just as an example. This is a movie that's just terrible and weird and probably on accident to some degree. This movie, these guys were talented at making a schlocky, goofy movie, and they made probably exactly what they were going for, more or less.
More or less.
I think so.
This is 84, so I think internationally, you had Conan in 82.
Uh-huh.
Conan ushered in the big sword and sorcery epics in a big way, because it's a Western movie, and Italy loved to jump on
those. Darkstalker.
So, Ator, Conquest, and all these movies, so it was an international thing, so no doubt Indonesia got some of those. I'm pretty sure they thought, let's do our own Conan.
So trying really hard, you think?
I think that they wanted to make something for their own country that was on par with Conan, and I actually enjoy this movie more than the Conan movies.
I don't know.
I do, because of how nutsoid this is. It goes farther with the nutsoid stuff than the Conan stuff went.
It did remind me of the second movie a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I think is really dumb. That one sucks. The first one I think is great.
As far as bonkers, nutsoid stuff, I enjoy this one.
Yeah.
Per volume.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no, I want to watch this. This is the sort of movie that I'd like to just kind of have on in the background.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing and a bad thing about the movie is that it's an onslaught almost of great little things that wear on you over
the time.
That the movie's
too much of a good thing.
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't have minded, like, just taking a break and then, like, watching the rest of it at another time because it's just, like, it is all really funny and it's full of these little moments, even the boring moments, which we were talking about.
Oh, right.
Lots of weird little
camera works
and zooms.
This is just a boring scene of him getting a mushroom, and they just keep that.
And they're like, Let's ramp up the zooms. Like, this part's boring.
As we go along, the warriors end up fighting themselves. The heroes find a ferryman who's like the River Styx ferryman.
The coconut skull.
Yeah, he's a skeleton.
Charon. Character
and he's cool. He doesn't do anything. There's a fight with crocodile men coming on the boat and they're trying to get the
they're taking down the crocodile people.
I think I forgot to mention the woman whose husband was taken is also on the quest for the sword with our sword hero. They team up.
I'm not afraid to die if it means I can see my beloved once more. And then I will take vengeance with my own hands.
And she's cool. I really like this, that she's like just about an equal to him, fight-wise. Mm-hmm. So they're beating up crocodile men, and our River Styx ferryman is just like not
paying attention. He's just chilling out this dry ice that his boat shoots out.
He takes a stick and he like impales a dude just like
casually
behind him. He's not even
super
facing
casual,
him.
Super casual. Just throws this spear into this crocodile dude.
Yeah. So there are characters in this movie that are awesome. And they have fleeting moments, but that might be why they're awesome. So the warriors end up fighting each other for the sword. Instead of teaming up as they originally did team up.
They teamed up to murder each other.
They decide we're going to fight each other. We teamed up. We were a success in mortally wounding the master guy.
Now let's fail and fight amongst ourselves.
Right.
The evil warriors are no longer united. If that is the case, we have no choice but to do battle, as suggested earlier by our companion.
This thing goes on for too long, but the end of it is our main villain, Thug, versus the Hag.
Yeah, our kin to our Ryu character, the evil Ryu.
Now he does decide, let's team up, you and me, we're the last two of the evil warriors, let's team up, go into the cave, get the sword, and we'll share it.
The devil's sword will belong to both of us, after you.
And she's like, okay, and neither of them trust each other, so they're side-eyeing each other.
The scene that preceded it is just they're tag-teaming each other to murder each other, even when you think one's tag-teamed with another one ends up not really.
I wasn't really with you! Right. He sucker punches her, but it's not a punch, it's a sword slice, and he chops her in half. Through the waist.
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually, because it was real slow and weird, because he cuts her in half, and then her torso floats over to a nearby rock and comfortably lands on the rock. And then she turns around and just sort of like,
you think you got me.
I didn't realize I could survive torso.
And so then they keep fighting. Her torso jumps back onto her lower half.
Right.
They keep fighting. Now, this is the part that you really, really like.
I do. Yeah, I did like this.
I love this, but describe it.
Okay. He takes his swords. He's got these swords that are like hooks or something. Yeah. They're like sort of like scimitars or falchions, but they're curved a little bit towards the end.
Uses them like scissors.
And he puts them together. He's like using them like scissors, which is real creative. Lots of just great creative little moments like this. So he's rushing at her with these scissor swords and cuts her head off, right?
Yeah.
And her head flies off, or he kicks it.
Yeah, he kicks it.
And it flies up into the corner of this cave that they're fighting in front of. And then he quickly kicks a rock into the crevice, blocking the head.
Yeah, so the head can't move anywhere.
Right, so she can't, like, reattach her head. She's like,
Banyutaga, release me! Release me from here! Release me, I tell you! I am still able to fight you, Banyutaga! Banyutaga! You traitor! I'll get revenge on you for this!
Real corny and awesome. And then her head just... her body goes up and tries to reattach.
Anyway. In spite of the boulder stopping her.
And I guess whatever the power is that allows her to recombine has just got impatient and just explodes.
It's a nonsense scene.
It's great. It was a scene that made me think that... I don't see how they could have written that out. Like, this is what happens and then this and then this. It just sounds too
strange. Yeah, it seems like on the fly.
And then her head goes up there and then... Oh, and how about
the body, and then do we have dynamite?
Yeah, no. It just feels like one of those things that kind of came out of something that they tried to do and it didn't work. And
right.
Who knows, but it was still great.
Then the hero and the villain are both coming in from different sides to the cave to get the sword. And this is where we meet another outlandish creature, also very brief. It's the Cyclops.
Oh yeah, the trash bag Cyclops.
He's got a glowing eye.
The glowing eye.
Sort of a reptilian mouth, but his body is like sort of like a trash bag that's inflated. And it's really funny.
Yeah, he's got... also the Godzilla
roar. Yeah, his noises.
That roar that I can't do that maybe you could insert here. Yeah, very cool.
But what I learned is that this whole movie very well may be a metaphor for an arms race.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess that's done in Western movies like the War Wagon. And they have the War Wagon, which is a Gatling gun. That's massive arms for back in the day. So the arms are those two devil swords, and they're like nuclear weapons. They have mystical properties, which is just basically stabbing.
But I feel like you could say an arms race, but you could say all sorts of things. Like, it's wide open for interpretation of what the sort of story could be. Because it's a power bequeathed to them from the gods.
Yeah.
You know? And it's one of those things like science. I feel like this pops up a lot in certain Asian films, and maybe it's because of the comparison I'm making right now, that movie Metropolis. Did you see that? You know what? A better comparison would be that Steam Boy. It's technology that could be used for good or evil.
Yeah.
And people are fighting over it, and it, if it's used for good, of course.
Now, when these guys fight for the sword, they do a lot of really stupid kung fu moves that don't really make sense. Everybody just keeps jumping up really, really high, like they're on trampolines.
It always feels like that's their undoing, too. Like the part where they say,
I'm gonna jump really high now because I don't know what else to do.
And that's where they get kind of screwed over.
There's a couple of moments where they touch feet, like the bottoms of their feet, like both feet in midair. They're really silly, very strange moments. Their feet touch. And for the very first time in this basic final battle between our hero and our villain, they start shooting lasers from their hands.
Yes. Reminded me of Dragon Ball Z. Or I don't know where that whole thing came from, where they're like two people shooting lots of power at each other.
Yeah.
There's a similar scene in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yep. Which this preceded by 2 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's one of those scenes where it's like, energy is coming out of my hand.
And here they are literally like also, and we're dash dot lasers.
Yeah, it was really kind of lame.
Yeah, it is. But I was pretty amazed with their forethought of like,
hey, we should have lasers. Like, that's going to happen in like 5 years in movies or cartoons and stuff. You think we can do it now? Nope.
Nope, not at all.
Not quite.
So eventually they face off against the queen. She has this big old pseudo orgy.
Yeah, kind of like no one's really getting it on. It's sort of like just a makeout party.
Yeah, it's early 2000s makeout party.
They're just sort of like awkwardly groping each other, and there's people going,
Yeah, there's some ladies don't want it. Some ladies do want it. All the guys want it.
Yeah, everybody looks real uncomfortable, honestly.
Yeah.
And they keep cutting to this prison.
Yeah, I call them cannibal slaves.
Cannibal slaves, yeah.
Because they threw a body, they threw a guy into the cannibal pit, and they just like...
and pieces of head.
Now this movie sounds incredibly grisly as we're describing it. It's not. It's not necessarily even cartoony, because it doesn't seem like it's for children. It doesn't look or feel like it's for kids. But it has a cartoon quality, but not that kind.
Yeah, there's certain movies that like I can't eat to for some reason.
Yeah.
Like I can be kind of squeamish, and if it's too gross or disgusting, like I have trouble eating food.
Yeah, well this has like ketchup packet, blood squirts sort of thing. It's not realistic. Nothing's realistic in this movie. So they get the one up on her by accidentally stabbing the statue that also shoots flames and lasers.
Right, that she's linked with. The evil crocodile statue with the glowing blue eyes that
Which
shoots.
Makes me think they saw Conan.
It was the crocodile turret. I like to think of it as a...
Yeah, it was kind of like a
magical
turret. Remember Conan with the statue and the horn? And
yes.
Yeah, so that makes me think that...
That thing creeped me out.
Makes me think of that. But that was the second Conan, wasn't it? So maybe not. This came out maybe the same year, 84. But the soundtrack in this film, pretty great.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of creepy sometimes.
Kind of Goblin, kind of John Carpenter, this electronic... You wouldn't expect electronic music
so
in
moody,
this.
Sort of drone.
Mm-hmm.
kind of going on a lot of the time.
Especially during the end dance scene before the big finale, there's this dance number where it's the slowest choreography, and then everybody does the makeout scene.
That's another problem, I think, is the last couple fight scenes in this movie just feel really, just...
Get on with it.
Kind of boring. They needed more
Eventually, there were a lot of artful shots that were long and slow and slowly pushing in on a person's face as they emote to what we don't know. And those scenes were in desperate need of truncation. They needed to be cut.
Yeah.
But I liked the movie. That's it.
I did too. I liked it. I would like to say that I did.
You even inquired with me if it's available still to buy. And it is, indeed.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
But not on Blu-ray. I would love...
Occasionally just throwing this on at a party or something.
I would love a really cleaned up Blu-ray of it.
Yeah.
But
it reminded me, like, I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed, like, Darkstalker or something like that, Reptilicus. Like, it's just one of those great, really bad movies that's...
That's Devil's Sword.
Devil's Sword.
Thanks for joining me again.
No problem.
Good night, everybody. I'm Snake Stick.